Welcome to Reading, Writing, Rolling, Imagination and Fiction in the Age of Harry Potter. This is episode 42, Spinning Jenny Weasley, another of our mini episodes with bonus content. Today we will be talking with Louise Freeman about the occasionally maligned but always interesting Jenny Weasley. Joining us for Reading, Writing, Rolling. I am your host, Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds 2. My co-host today is Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions at Mount Carmel College of Nursing and author of several Harry Potter essays. Thanks, Emily, for joining me once again.
Oh, this is just a light in my week. And I love the topic. I love to think about Ginny and her role in the series. So this is great.
Yeah, I think sometimes we don't think enough about some of these side characters, and these little mini episodes are giving us a chance to, you know, delve into them a little bit, which I appreciate. Well, we have Louise Freeman to thank for this idea. So also joining us as our special guest today is Dr. Louise Freeman, professor of psychology at Mary Baldwin University, licensed behavior analyst and service provider for special needs children, and author of many articles about psychology in Harry Potter and other young adult literature. Thanks so much, Louise, for being on the show today.
Well, thank you. I'm excited you accepted my idea for this particular show. You know, I was part of the Draco Malfoy show a few weeks ago that we did on him. And
yes,
I saw you had just done one on Aunt Petunia, which is really cool. I love these character-driven shows, but I really thought it was time we did a nice character, you know? Neither Draco or Aunt Petunia are the nicest people out there. And Jenny, I think, is a really, really awesome character. And one that I really wanted to talk about a little bit further. And so thank you for indulging me on this.
Yes. And, you know, Jenny is one of my favorites as well, but she's not everybody's favorite. there's some hate going on for Jenny out there in the fandom, I would say. How do you all respond to the common complaint that Jenny lacks personality?
You know, because I have heard this a lot. I have one friend in particular, and if he's listening, he will know who he is. But he makes me think about a lot of things. And sometimes I'm just grateful for it to kind of work out my own thoughts and my own kind of objection to it. But, you know, I liken the shade that Jenny gets thrown to the shade that Kristen Stewart got thrown for her portrayal of Bella Swan in the Twilight films.
That's interesting.
Let's be honest. Every girl who read or and got into those books really wanted to be Bella Swan, you know? And I think Kristen Stewart did a great job with her portrayal of Bella Swan. I thought she looked the part. I thought she acted the part well. You know, I'm no expert, but I had no objection to her. But that's also because I did not want to be Bella Swan as I was reading those books. You know, that was just not my reaction to them. And so I don't know. I do kind of wonder if Ginny isn't this coveted spot in the narrative, the love interest of Harry Potter. And if this doesn't sort of invite critique, because you want her to be a certain way to be qualified for that position. You really want her. You're holding her to a very high standard, maybe much higher than you know, other characters. So I don't know. That's just kind of my interpretation of all the shade that poor Ginny gets.
You know, that's really interesting because that is a theory in romance novel analysis as well, that the heroine in the romance novel is usually just a placeholder for the reader. And the reader likes to imagine herself, we'll say, in this formulation, in that role. And so some romance authors don't even put a lot of description of the character because the reader is to put themselves in it. Now, some other, I think, your higher quality romance authors have pushed back on that idea to say, no, you know, these are fully fledged characters that we're drawing here who, you know, the heroine is herself, you know, a character. And yet, I do think sometimes that I think that's so interesting that we who don't like Jenny are just jealous. we want Harry for ourselves. I love that. What a cool idea. I said we, but I actually really like Jenny. So
yeah, right. Well, and we might not be the kind of age range demographic of reader who would have that kind of reaction to the narrative. So
yeah, Louise, what do you think?
My biggest reason for thinking that people may accuse Jenny of having no personality is that they are conflating the movies with the books. The scriptwriters mm-hmm. shortchanged Jenny so much in the films. You know, we don't get to see a lot of her feistiness. We don't get to see a lot of her, you know, standing up to Harry, standing up to Hermione, even, that she does. We don't get to see her, you know, firing the bogey hex, you know, to get rid of the inquisitorial squad. You know, they instead had the inquisitorial squad eating the skiving snack boxes and throwing up instead of, you know, Jenny, you know, was the one who got them out of that. And they just skip so much of her story. I mean, we see her kind of in the background a lot. Obviously she has the part where she's the damsel in distress in Chamber of Secrets, where she gets rescued at the end. But, you know, even then, we don't really see her emotional response to that. We don't see her, you know, crying and regretting what she's done and being led away for hot chocolate and stuff like that. She just sort of wakes up and said, oh, yeah, I was the one who did it, and gets then carried away by the Phoenix, and you don't see her again. You just see it goes straight to Harry and Dumbledore, and that's the end of Jenny's story. I remember in the sixth book, when Harry is Quidditch captain and is suddenly, is doing the Quidditch tryout. Suddenly Jenny's there in full Quidditch attire, and we've never seen Jenny play Quidditch before. It's like, how did Jenny get to be second in command in the Quidditch team? And of course, because they took all that part about her taking over from Harry during his Quidditch ban and all that stuff out of book five. So it just wasn't there. So that's part of the reason is so much of her story got skipped in the movies. And I think that makes people forget a lot of what she did in the books.
I totally agree with that, Louise. I think that's a great comment. Yeah. I was thinking about most of the moments that I really love about Jenny. Like, I just love it when she takes down Ron in the Half-Blood Prince, where there's some romantic difficulty, you know, and Ron is basically about to accuse her of being a loose woman, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
She...
Slut shaming.
Yes, I wasn't going to use the word.
Oh, sorry.
But almost calls her a slut, basically. And so she hauls off on him in the most brutal sisterly fashion. And I just thought that was an amazing moment. And it's not like a good moment in the mm-hmm. sense that it's a terrible argument. But it shows her personality very clearly and her strength.
She was not going to take that from her brother.
Yeah. And her ferocity. Yeah.
Her intolerance for the untruth that was, you know. I mean, it was a great moment for truth telling.
Yeah.
Maybe not a great moment for interpersonal relations. But.
Right. Right.
But, you know, and then another reason I think some people kind of take the Jenny has no personality aspect of it is because, she is, you know, we can talk about this later, but certainly one of her main roles is to be Harry Potter's romantic interest. That really does not get going until very late in the series. And that is just fine. It does go in the face of a what you expect, of course, the romantic lead of the hero to be the second, you know, or certainly the most important female in the book. And of course, that place is taken by Hermione. It's not taken by Jenny. But, you know, although, I mean, you see this this crush she has on Harry at the beginning. Absolutely nothing happens with that until much later in the series, which I think is actually a good thing. You know, she's 10 years old when the series started. You know, if she was set up to be the femme fatale, you know, romantic heroine from day one, that's a 10-year-old and that's not appropriate. Okay. You know, we actually, even Harry himself, his interest in romance develops relatively late. I mean, he has to be strong-armed to even ask a girl to the dance in when he's 14 years old at the Yule Ball. And, you know, he starts to have this attraction to Cho in that book, but still, you know, it clearly has no clue what romance is or how to go about it, as seen with his failed attempt with Cho and the rather disastrous way that relationship goes. You know, thank goodness Jenny wasn't his first romantic interest, right? Because he really would have messed it up.
He needed a practice run.
He absolutely. And, but you know, obviously so did Jenny too. I mean, yeah. Jenny's relationships did not seem to be, I mean, she had boyfriends before and we don't know a lot about them, but you know, her relationship with Dean did not really seem to be healthy. They simply seemed to spend a lot of the time crying and fighting about it. And it's like, you know, I think they both had their maturing process before they solidified their attraction to each other. And that, I think, is a very good thing. Otherwise, it simply, I don't think, would have worked out for them. So, I mean, I think it's actually good that the romance, in the series as a whole, romance is much secondary nature to the adventure. And of course, Harry's partner in adventure is not Jenny for the most part. It's Hermione.
Right.
Jenny plays she's like a lot like Neville. She plays a very important but secondary role. And, you know, she does these important things, like she comes up with the name Dumbledore's Army, which of course turns out to be very important that they need that organization, Dumbledore's Army, and nothing else. She's the daughter in Not My Daughter, You Bitch part that motivates Molly to take out Bellatrix, which is, you know, just one of the most awesome scenes in either the book or the movie. Yeah, you know, I looked at one of the quizzes on the top 200 Harry Potter characters, which I can usually get about 75%, by the way, when I'm trying to name them all. But Jenny is actually like number 15 on the list. She is the second highest of the female characters as far as mentions go, which is somewhat surprising to me. Hermione, of course, is first, and then the next 13 characters, I think, are men or male, and then Jenny. Jenny is right around there. Other characters that are mentioned about as many times as she include both her parents, Molly and Arthur, and McGonagall. McGonagall is mentioned about the same time. So there's a sort of a cluster of female characters right around there. But yeah, I mean, Jenny as the romantic interest is not the focus. And I actually think that's quite a healthy thing. I know Patrick McCauley has talked about how valuable he thinks the Harry Hermione relationship is in terms of having this platonic relationship between two teenagers that, you know, never becomes romantic, and how good and healthy a thing that is to see.
Right.
And,
okay.
It's deeply self-sacrificial.
Yeah.
You know, it's deeply, you know, they're giving, you know, Hermione constantly gives, you know, of herself, right? Mm-hmm. And vice versa. And yet it's not romantic. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you put the emphasis on that and then make the romance secondary, which, you know, in a book about 11 to 17 years old, that's not a bad thing to take a little of the emphasis off the romance and, you know, put it on some other stuff.
Right. And, you know, I think it's interesting because Harry and Jenny, in fact, you know, Harry wants to be away from Jenny and they're apart for almost the entirety of that last book, so that we're not seeing like their romance develop. He actually breaks up with her at the end of the sixth book, kind of, you know, and, you know, I think that's an interesting choice that Rowling has made, too. And you were talking about how both Jenny and Harry have to grow as individuals before they can come together as a couple. I mean, I think that's so true for all of us. And actually, Jenny's tirade against Ron that I was talking about, it is a little bit of an expression of, you know, it's okay to have romantic relationships, you know, and to try people out right. a little bit, and that there's no need for somebody to feel ashamed of that, and they shouldn't feel ashamed of it. And that's how we learn and grow. But J.K. Rowling literally did say that she was, her plan was to have Jenny, you know, develop as a character and Harry develop as a character as individuals so that they could be a good match for each other. So I'll just read for you a little quote. She says, I felt, and I'm talking years ago when this was all planned, initially she's terrified by his image. I mean, he's a bit of a rock god to her when she sees him first at 10 or 11. He's this famous boy. So Jenny had to go through a journey as well. I feel that Jenny and Harry in this book, they are total equals. They are worthy of each other. They've both gone through a big emotional journey, and they've really got over a lot of delusions, to use your word, together. So I enjoyed writing that. I really like Jenny as a character.
You know, I do too. And I don't, everything you're saying is true about, you know, the way that this relationship develops very slowly. But I have to say, I've just been doing just searches for her name throughout the books. And in the early books, obviously, she's just this terrified kid, you know, who we're told by Ron that she talks all the time when Harry's not around. But then when he's around, she's very shy and she's constantly, you know, putting her elbow in the butter dish, you know, when he asks her questions and things, you know, it's adorable. But at the same time, we have to recognize that Rowling knew where this was heading, obviously.
Yes.
And she gave us these little clues, and she gave us this character, Ginny, who is very young, but who seems to have really excellent instincts with regard to Harry. And it's not that, you know, everybody knows that Harry, you know, everybody with a clue knows that Harry is a very important person. And yet Ginny is affected by this kind of to her core. And I think there's also, we see a little glimpse of her instinct that Harry is not just an important person, he's a very important person to her. And that instinct must run very deep with her if she can kind of have some awareness of this at the tender age of 10, right? And so I think that that she's interesting even from the beginning, but she's one of those characters, she's more interesting after you've read the whole series and you're going back through the reread and you see these moments where it foreshadows how important Harry will be in her life and how important she will be in his toward the end of the series.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think book two is such an interesting Jenny study. And when you look at the scholarship that people do on Jenny, book two really features really prominently in that, because book two is where you, because of her unrequited love for Harry and the fact that she's totally overawed by him, you know, there's the whole Valentine thing, right? And he's totally embarrassed by the Valentine that she sends him. This is what draws her to Tom Riddle's diary. She has, she's pouring out her romantic troubles with Harry to Tom Riddle in the diary. And this is what makes her vulnerable to his possession. And the fact that that then leads her to have a similar experience to Harry in terms of what it's like to have the Dark Lord in your head. That's a common experience that they then can share after that.
Yeah.
But it's one that she had through her, you know, through her love, unrequited love, was vulnerable to. And I think that helps to give her a lot of important insights into Harry himself, and also that quote, you know, about it's our choices, you know, our choices are what matter.
Yeah, it's interesting that her first, the first time Harry hears her talk is in book two, and it's in Flourish and Blots, and she defends Harry to Malfoy. She stands up to Malfoy. Mm. And you know, because Malfoy's teasing Harry about all the attention he got from Lockhart. And she says he didn't want all that to Malfoy. And she's very fierce, you know, to Malfoy. And it says in the narrative, it was the first time she had spoken in front of Harry. And uh-huh. and then that is just right before she gets slipped that diary. And just as you're saying, Katie, you know, that intense emotion she feels for Harry, you know, she's just finding her voice. She's just finding her voice. And then she kind of gets rerouted into the diary. But yeah, you're right. That does give her that, shared Dark Lord induced trauma, you know, mm-hmm. that she, and that, you know, later in the beginning of book three, she and Harry have some nice moments where they kind of connect and share some humorous moments. But then that pattern of her being excluded by the trio begins, and then she becomes kind of irrelevant again until later in the series.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that possession by Voldemort that she experienced, you know, she's the one who, when Harry is being all angsty and screaming at everybody in book five, she's the one who basically tells him, snap out of it. You know, you're worried about being possessed by Voldemort. Well, I've been possessed by Voldemort. Here, you tell me what you're feeling and I'll tell you if you're being possessed by Voldemort. Okay. No, you're not being possessed by Voldemort. Get over it. And, you know. And she, you know, she's the one who kind of, you know, when even Ron and Hermione cannot get through to that, you know, he's so angry and he's so angst-ridden about being excluded from everything and you know, and for good reason. But, you know, Jenny is the one who kind of snaps him out of that in many ways.
And she's also and the one who recognizes the Half-Blood Prince's book as yes. a potential danger to Harry. And she's like, who here has had experience with a book that is steering you morally in the wrong direction? I don't know. Maybe me. And so she once again calls to that experience as something that gives her an ability to talk to Harry more as an equal. And I think that's the key to that as a successful romantic relationship.
And at the same time, throughout my readings of the series, I've often kind of been frustrated that she wasn't kept closer, you know, that like, I mean, obviously it serves a narrative function. And I think it's better that she's kept at arm's length in the end when they do finally get together. But it is frustrating sometimes because you're like, oh, come on, keep this one close. Like she could be part of this group, mm-hmm. right? She could be the, you know, and she does, she gets her moments, but.
Well, Emily, I think you'd appreciate that. You know, one of the ways, major ways she proves how useful she's going to be in this whole struggle against Voldemort is how useful she is on the Quidditch pitch. She's the one
yes.
who takes over as yeah. seeker when Harry's banned. She eventually becomes a chaser. It turns out she's really good at this yeah. and can, of course, she winds up snatching the snitch right from under Cho's nose, of course, showing that she is going to eventually also be Harry's romantic interest and not Cho. And she smashes the broom against Zachariah Smith's commentating booth when he's dissing the Gryffindors. And, you know, she shows a lot of her feistiness and her character on the Quidditch pitch, too, which I know.
Yeah, and her value in the fight against Voldemort.
Because yeah, but Emily will tell you, right, that your role in Quidditch is also tied into your role in the big battle. So the fact that Jenny proves that she
Caitlin
is
Harper.
A competitor. Yes, yeah. and Caitlin Harper, too. Mm-hmm. So
she,
I just, as I was doing my little research for this show, I came across a Quora question that was, why does Harry fall in love with Jenny? And the top answer was, because she likes Quidditch. Which I thought was, you know, well, sort of a funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, she really, we learn a lot more about her Quidditch abilities and stuff like that in the fifth book when she's, you know, called on in as substitute seeker. And by the way, I think she's the only one we see who can actually play two different positions on the Quidditch team. You know, she can play seeker, but she can also play chaser, which I think makes her kind of interesting in that way. But I mean, for me, one of the most definitive moments for Jenny is in book four at the Yule Ball, where Harry and Ron are trying to find dates. And of course, they can't do it. And they're having a hard time asking because they're socially clueless and they don't know how to approach a girl about to ask them to this dance, which is apparently the only dance in their entire educational career. But so they're sitting there and Ron finally says, okay, Jenny, well, why don't you just go with Harry? And Jenny immediately says, I can't, I'm going with Neville. Now, she had to have been just kicking herself at that moment, where here she has a chance. She's been crushing on Harry for 2 years. He's one of the champions. She has a chance to go to this one and only dance that Hogwarts ever has with a Triwizard champion who she has a crush on. And she can't do it because she promised Neville, or because she had agreed to go with Neville. Now, I know John Granger is very fond of saying that, you know, talking about the start of the book about Harry, an 11-year-old boy, how there's nothing stupider than an 11-year-old boy. Well, my counterpart to that is, I'm not sure there's anything more self-centered than a 13-year-old girl. And I speak to it as someone who has been a 13-year-old girl and who has raised a 13-year-old girl and known lots of 13-year-old girls in my life. But particularly when it comes to dating and romance and the boys they like, I mean, they are pretty ruthless. Okay. I would say probably 80, 90% of 13-year-old girls in that situation would have immediately said, oh, of course I'll go with you and let's figure out how to dump Neville.
Right. And expected him to understand.
And he probably mm-hmm. would have understood.
Yes.
Neville. I mean, would have understood. I mean, there would have been no social consequences to her at all for dumping Neville and going with Harry. I mean, nobody would have thought badly of her, probably not even Neville. But she didn't do it. And apparently never even crossed her mind to do that. You know, Neville had asked her, she had said yes, and she's going to stick to that even when she is faced with this opportunity of a lifetime. And that to me, I mean, that tells a lot about her character, mm-hmm. the values with which she has been raised.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, keeping your word, being honest, being upfront, not being sneaky, not being selfish, not being anything like that. That whole, you know, Weasley family values, basically, mm-hmm. which, of course, Harry, you know, another, I think, role for Jenny beyond the kind of romantic interest is Jenny's, Harry's ticket to actually becoming part of the Weasley family. I mean, he was adopted basically because he was Ron's best friend. And that's how Molly began caring for him and sending him Christmas presents and Easter eggs and that type of stuff. But, you know, you can't join someone's family forever by virtue of being the best friend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he marries Jenny, of course, he is going to really be part of the Weasley family for good. And of course, that's such a source of strength for him. And that's just, you know, everything he has lacked in his upbringing with the Dursleys, you find in the Weasley family. You find the loving parents and the discipline and the values and the good food and everything else that a great family involves. But, you know, I've always been impressed with that moment that Jenny mm-hmm. just kept her word and she did the right thing. In a circumstances that I can't think of many 13-year-olds who would have done that. I mean, agree. I think Anne of Green Gables might have dumped her someone she had made a promise to if she had her true crush come along at the right moment and ask her. But Jenny Weasley didn't, and I think that's a real strong insight into her character and part of what makes her such a good match for Harry on a moral level and on a character level.
Mm-hmm. She almost shows up Ron. I mean, she really kind of shows up Ron in that moment, you know, because this is the very thing that Ron struggles with later on, is that standing by your friends, even when times get hard, even when there's no social benefit and there's, you know, I mean,
ooh,
even
yeah.
because, and that is, and you hear the pressure, the familial pressure he feels because of his decisions of leaving Harry and Hermione in book 7, he's ashamed. He knows he won't be welcome back by his family when they find out he's done this, that they find out he's left his friends, he will not be welcomed back. And he feels that pressure. He hides out from his parents. He stays at Shell Cottage because he knows he can't show his face at the Burrow, having done this. And so it does give you an impression of the kind of parents that the Weasleys are. I'm huge on parent. I'm looking at all the parents lately because I've been writing about this, and it really strikes me. But the other thing I wanted to say about Louise, your point about his marrying into Ron's family, that is such a good point. And I think that's even something that points to a larger reality for him and Harry's character arc, is that he is a fully initiated member of the wizarding world. When he marries into the Weasley family, he not just becomes a Weasley, but he becomes this full-fledged member of this wizarding community, you know, that he has striven for since the very moment that he gets that owl, you know, and that mysterious message from Hogwarts, you know. So this is the completion of that kind of induction into this wizarding world.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And I was just thinking about how, you know, it's less that Jenny becomes a Potter and more that Harry becomes a Weasley in that combination. And I think, you know, we could talk about Jenny's symbolism, because I think that Rowling was intentional about, you know, the seventh daughter, the only girl who's been born in the Weasley family for generations, and the name Ginevra, which I think is supposed to be like a Guinevere name. But what I think is great about our conversation, and I think that there's probably an alchemical something going on there also, which we'll be talking about.
Flaming red hair.
Yes, we'll be talking about that in a future episode, but alchemical weddings. But I actually think that the best parts of Jenny and the most important parts are the things we've been talking about, which are the character elements and what she's doing in terms of character development, not only in her terms of her own, but also other characters in the story whose character development is fostered by her and her presence in that world. So I think that's really the highlight, of her, you know, how she's functioning. So I don't even think the symbolic is the most important level there. So let's talk a little bit about how we would compare the various Jennies that we have contact with here. We've got book Jenny, who I think we all quite like. We've also got movie Jenny, who we're, I think, less impressed by. They take away a lot of her good moments, you know, as you said. Definitely, they should have been the bat bogey curse. I mean, what could be better? I'm sure it would be hard to film. But what could be better?
That would be very hard to film.
Than being attacked by boogers that look like bats. That it's just genius jinx there. So, but anyway.
I should say, if I could say one thing about movie Jenny, I have always appreciated the casting of Bonnie Wright in that. I think she did a very good job with the material she was given, which unfortunately just wasn't a lot. She looks like kind of she made that transition from kind of round-faced little girl that she was in the first book and first couple of books to, you know, much more attractive and mature-looking young woman later on. I do remember one scene, which I really just thought was priceless. It's when they're, it must be Order of the Phoenix, when they're walking across the bridge, coming back from Hogsmeade, having formed the DA, and Hermione's talking about, oh, you know, it feels good to be breaking the rules for once. And then she makes that comment to Harry, and, oh, you realize Cho couldn't keep her eyes off of you. And Bonnie Raitt, you know, she has no line there, but she just gives this look that you can just see the jealousy on her face. You know, she like glances at Hermione and sort of glares at her and then glances back at Harry. And you can, and that moment, you have to be watching for it. You have to kind of know the backstory that Jenny has a crush on Harry, which probably if you've only known her through the movies, you don't even realize at that point. But you can see that kind of flash of anger, real anger on her face. That Cho, Cho can't keep her eyes off my man, huh? and that was a lot. I mean, that's what I could imagine the book Jenny doing at that moment. just.
Yeah, I think that actress has, she has a kind of natural maturity to her in the way that she, the way that she speaks and like the way that she looks. And I did think that that was, that ultimately was definitely good casting choice. It's just you don't see her fierceness enough because, as you said, I think they take out too many of those moments.
And then when you see it, it's kind of out of context. Mm-hmm. You're like, whoa.
And that then there's that fire in the burrow scene that was added that seemed to be, they needed to sort of catch up. Oh, yes, by the way, Jenny and Harry like each other. Just so you know, we forgot to tell you that, but here it is.
I think if we add in the cursed child, Jenny, we see I think that's potentially a different character too. And I know, Louise, you've seen Cursed Child, right?
Yes, I have.
So I've just read it, and I know it's not the same as seeing it. So I'll put you on the spot. What do you think about the Jenny in The Cursed Child, and does that seem consistent with the book, Jenny?
Oh, I like the version of Jenny in The Cursed Child. She was very, you know, supportive of Harry. She was supportive of her children. She had some of her mother's temper. Like there's that scene where she tells Harry, you know, when he's kind of blown it for the second time and Albus has run away, she said, "I'm going to have a hard time forgiving you if you run him off again," basically. You know, she has that, I remember the first time I discussed this on a podcast, you know, some people were saying that, oh, she was threatening to leave him then. And it's like, I don't think it didn't come across that way on stage, but it did come across that she was really, really angry. And she was, like Molly, not afraid to show her husband that she's upset with him. They do kind of talk a little bit about, they do kind of address the fact that, you know, she was kind of left out. She's still, even though she's married to Harry, it's still Harry, Ron, and Hermione are the famous ones. And she's not always linked with them publicly as much, and how that was hard on her. But I liked the Cursed Child Jenny. I think it was more consistent with the book Jenny than the movie Jenny. And she rounded out the cast nicely. The actress that played her in the version of New York I saw, I thought was quite good. I've heard some of the complaints of like people who saw the London cast saying that she was just sort of yelling a lot and seemed a bit shrewish at times. But I did not have that impression from the casting that I saw in the New York, which was about a year ago.
I mean, what I think is interesting about that is what you've said, and this may be Emily, this is going into your issue here. This is Jenny as a parent. And that's one of the things we see in The Cursed Child is Harry as a parent, Jenny as a parent, and that we see some shades of Molly in the way that she is as a parent as well.
Right, but the good shades. I mean, you know, Molly has a lot of good shades, so that's easy. But no, I remember reading it, and I'm sorry, it's been a little while since I've read it, but I remember reading it and thinking, you know, this is a really good opportunity, especially for those who did complain that Jenny was sort of one-dimensional. You know, this is a good opportunity for that character to get a little bit more page time, a little bit more time in the narrative, to play a more significant role. But I do think, I generally think that she is consistent with book Jenny, especially as she provides that kind of grounding for Harry.
Mm-hmm. I think it is worth noting that of kind of the secondary trio, the ones that, you know, Neville, Luna, and Jenny, the ones who, you know, reformed Dumbledore's army and led the resistance against the Karrows the second year, Jenny's the only one that makes it into the Cursed Child. Neville is mentioned, but is never on stage. And Luna, I don't think, is even mentioned at all. So,
yeah, very interesting. Well, obviously, Jenny is an important character and probably deserves a little bit more attention than she has been getting, maybe in the, not only the fandom, but in the scholarly community as well. Well, that brings us to the end of our mini podcast. Thank you so much, Louise Freeman, for helping us to explore this very intriguing character.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed talking about her.
Me too. good to hear from like-minded people, but also, you know, we're challenging some ideas. Thanks to you, Emily, for being my co-host today.
Always ready to dish on the Weasleys.
That's right. I'd also like to give a big shout out to our technical editor in Australia, Emma Nicholson. Thanks for all that you do, Emma. We so appreciate you. And as always, we also very much appreciate our partners at MuggleNet, the number one Wizarding World resource since 1999, and our MuggleNet producer, Lori Beckoff. Dear listeners, we are also so glad you joined us, and we would love it if you would leave a comment or question for us. Please share your thoughts at readingwritingrolling@gmail.com, readwriteroll on Twitter, or on our Facebook page. I am mixing up our closing quote, given the unusual crisis that we're experiencing due to COVID-19. So now I will leave you with the wisdom of Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, who said, "Happiness can be found, even in the darkest of times, if one only remembers to turn on the light." Please join us next time when we'll be turning on the light with the help of a little Harry Potter magic.